Hi, it's Eric Chase, a The Morning After podcast exclusive, or The Morning After podcast exclusive. I've wanted to do this for quite some time now that I'm back from a little vacation, which, well, this will dove nicely into why I wanted to break down this TED Talk. I decided to go home to Philadelphia. I've been meaning to do so. I've needed to. And I finally looked at a 76ers NBA schedule, packed a bunch of stuff, got some tickets for a game, hung out with my dad. And part of the reason that I motivated myself to go home is because I realized that it will have been the first time in as long as I can remember, even when I was living in Philadelphia or just like an hour north of my hometown, like an hour door to door when I was in Allentown and from Allentown's door to my home door in Philadelphia. First time I've ever been home where I wasn't depressed or stressed or dealing with some kind of mental struggle or someone had died. The last couple times I'd been home in 2015, in the summer of 2015, I was gone. I was gone from Toledo for like 2 weeks because my mom had passed away from lung cancer. December of 2016, I had been planning to go home. I went home a day early because I got a call at 5:45. My dad calls me that early in the morning as I'm getting ready to go on the air. I'm like, this can't be good. But I was expecting it because my grandfather was 97 years old and he was on his last breaths. So I just went home a day early, but still had to deal with some final things of my grandfather being buried that next day. So it was, I motivated myself to go home and not worry about anything, just hang out. And I was high strung and always looking to do something and trying to fight boredom as much as usual, but no depression, no stress. And talking about things like that is what my TEDx Toledo talk was centered around. It was maybe 10 years or so ago, a very close friend of mine named Brent, who I've now known for almost 20 years. I remember when I first got to meet him, I was like concerned that he was coming to take my hours at a radio station that I worked at. And here we are, great friends and one of the three or four people in my life who had a mega impact on my career. And we still stay close, not as close as we were back then. He lives in Detroit, but we still keep up. And he said to me long ago, do you listen to TED Talks? I'm like, what's that? He bugs me about Bitcoin now. He's ahead of the curve with the common person with Bitcoin and where all that money is. So if he turns into a millionaire, like demagogue who can buy a planet like the next Elon Musk, I'll credit him for that. But he was ahead of the curve with TED stuff as well. Technology, entertainment, and design. I didn't follow up on it when he suggested it. And then years later, some of these TED Talks would stumble my way. And then within the last 5 years, when I was doing like commuting from Detroit and Ohio to home, Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, I got to listening to them. It was kind of hard on YouTube, but if you can find, and you did find mine, you'll be able to find others. And the one that really struck me on one ride was an author that I was familiar with. I'd read some of his books, or I had read people who had written about his books, and his name is Daniel Pink. And I believe it was Mastery Something and Autonomy. I forget the third one, but whenever I need a quick pick-me-up or I need something profound or provocative, some kind of mental, in-between-the-ears inspiration, I go to his TED Talk, which would have you think I would remember that third word much more easily than forgetting it a couple of moments ago. His stuff sounds like this.
I want to try to dust off some of those legal skills, what's left of those legal skills. I don't want to tell you a story. I want to make a case. I want to make a hard-headed, evidence-based, dare I say lawyerly case for rethinking how we run our businesses. We need a whole new approach. The good news about all this is that the scientists who've been studying motivation have given us this new approach. It's an approach built much more around intrinsic motivation, around the desire to do things because they matter, because we like it, because they're interesting, because they're part of something important. And to my mind, that new operating system for our businesses revolves around three elements: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. autonomy, the urge to direct our own lives, mastery, the desire to get better and better at something that matters, and purpose, the yearning to do what we do in the service of something larger than ourselves.
Hopefully you're slightly inspired, if maybe not inspired to go start your business or do whatever, but to go listen to the rest of it. The great thing about these TED Talks, condense lots of great, intelligent, emotionally relative, profound and provocative information into 17 minutes. I had never been to a TED Talk in Toledo. I had always found an excuse. It cost too much. I didn't want to miss a day of work because they'd been at the Seagate Center for every year that I've lived in Toledo. So I was fortunate that my first one I was able to attend, I got to speak at. I was fortunate to have that opportunity because I had been let go of my previous job from hosting the Morning Rush with everybody else on June 6th. Shortly thereafter that, I saw a tweet from a girl named Amy in Tiffin, who I follow on Twitter, and she's great. I still do follow her stuff. I was like, this is awesome. I've always wanted to go to one of these. I think I have plenty to speak about with mental health to talk at one of these. I've always liked, when I was a kid in elementary and middle and high school, I always wanted to be the first one to get up in front of the class. I always loved doing oral reports. Type up 5 pages, 12 pages, no thanks. Stand up in front of class and do it first and get a little bit of extra credit before everybody else. Hell yeah, count me in for that. Another time I'll tell you a story about a public speaking or public communication class I took at Towson University when I first went away to college. And every week there was a different theme, and I changed mine from going to the Phillies World Series game in 1993 to my first trip to a strip club. It was incredible. I'll tell that story another time. But this is about getting invited, getting an invitation to speak at TEDx Toledo. So the nominations and submissions and whatever you want to call it were open right after me getting fired for speaking at TEDx Toledo. So I did my best to capitalize on that, and I kind of hinged my unemployment hopes to, one, being able to speak at TEDx Toledo to help raise my profile, because I do enjoy, I like to be the voice for those who can't or won't speak about this mental health stuff, because it's easy for me. Nobody wants to hear about my Batman or Transformer stuff. Maybe you want to hear about my dogs. I don't have kids or anything like familial to talk about, but I'll tell you about like all the weird thoughts that go through my head because of how the chemicals in my brain work. So I thought this would be a great opportunity, and to this day, I'd still like to continue public speaking, not just locally, but regionally. You want to fly me somewhere and hear me talk, I'd be happy to do it. That, and of course, waiting out my non-compete and getting hired at Cumulus Broadcasting. So the two things I hooked and hinged my unemployment hopes to happened, and I was so thankful to get that email that one day saying that I've been selected to speak at TEDx Toledo. What I wanted to do was, I've been critical of my talk. After I got done with it, I gave myself a B+, and my therapist was just over the moon, and he was there that day, and he just gave me a huge pat on the back, and he's like, we got to go celebrate. It took a couple of months to get the audio and the video back and the YouTube back from the TEDx talk. I lowered my grade to a B-, and it was like hearing myself on the radio for the first time, or when you hear your own voice. I cringed a bunch of times. So I wanted you to listen to it. If you haven't already, this will be your first time. I wanted you to hear my critiques as we go through the speech, which begins right now. Stigma with mental health, not for me. Hopelessness and helplessness, yes, that's me. 1 in 5 American adults suffer from some kind of mental illness. 1 in 25 American adults suffer from a severe mental illness. Things like schizophrenia, dark depression-ridden PTSD, schizophrenia, and much, much worse. And there's the first flub. We'll get back to it in a second. I said schizophrenia twice. And don't worry about my uhs. I'm a human being. And as much as I wrote this speech out, I've never written a speech out before, but there's a certain tone in TED Talks. There's a certain voice in which they're all presented in, and I wanted to make sure that I matched that. Usually when I do talks, not as prestigious as a TED Talk. When I spoke for some businesses that work with ProMedica and over at Owens Corning, it was not TED Talk-like. So some bullet points, and I just, you know, told stories and shared what was on my mind. A lot less refined than this. So there was the first flub. Don't worry about the us, but I mentioned schizophrenia twice. And no, I didn't write schizophrenia down twice when I wrote out the speech.
I'm bipolar 2, type 2. It's a lesser form of the disorder. I don't get manic. I don't have mania. I don't have like sex rampages, or I don't spend my time at the casino gambling my savings away. I know that sounds like fun shit. I kind of wish I had that stuff, but then I'd be broke.
I got some laughs. That worked, and that was good. And if you pay attention, and I hope that you do, I also noticed when I was doing this, because I was exhausted later on in the afternoon and evening from this, I knew that I was more anxious and nervous for this than I said that I was, than I admitted to being. You'll hear my pace and tone in the beginning, and I normally speak pretty fast. It's because I've got a deviated septum, and I've got to do everything like in one breath. I should get it fixed, but then I'll have a broken nose for whatever. I really should get it fixed, but I wonder if my voice will change, and I kind of do like my voice. So, but in the beginning of the speech, the first half of the speech is a lot faster, and I don't use pauses as well as I do in the second half. Let's continue.
I do get hypomania. It's a lesser form of all that stuff. You're actually seeing it right now. How does it look? Does it look good? Good. I get creative bursts of energy. I'll talk really fast. I would talk with my hands if not for having the clicker and the microphone here. I do get the depression part of bipolar really bad.
Quick note. Creative bursts of energy. It should be bursts of creative energy. So a flub. And again, I didn't want to recite this word by word. I wanted to know it as everything I do in my life when it comes to preparing for tests or doing the show, I like to cram everything in, study super, super duper hard, and then step off. And then just regurgitate what it is because I've worked hard. I've prepared. Prepare to fail. I over-prepare and then just let the stuff come back out.
I get anxiety. I get some OCD. And if this is going to make you leave, now is the time. I get suicidal thoughts. That's not funny to laugh at, sir.
I loosened up now because I got another joke.
It's another not laugh. Curable. How fun is that? It is very treatable, and we're going to talk about that. It's apocryphal. You can give me the credit for it, though. Shakespeare, Picasso is what you'll find if you Google it. They say the meaning of life is to find your gift, and the purpose of life is to give that gift away. I hope my gift here today is to empower you and your loved ones to talk about mental health.
All right, now we're off and running. I forget where I found that line, and it gets reversed sometimes. The meaning of life, and I'll repeat it, the meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give that gift away. And again, I've heard it reversed, and I saw it somewhere, whether it was on Instagram or read it somewhere over the summertime. I made a little note. I have a note in my notes on my iPhone that says philosophy and little maxims and beliefs of mine. And I was looking for one to include in this speech. That one made it. And yeah, if you do look it up, Picasso or Shakespeare usually gets credited with it, but nobody can really draw it back to them. Kind of like how, you can't believe everything you read on the internet, Abraham Lincoln. It was like that, but it worked great for this speech.
Without stigma. Let's jump back into the early 2000s. This is a good-ass life. Straight off my MySpace page. It was the early 2000s. I was living and working in Orlando. My radio career was going exactly where I wanted it to go. I was doing a morning show down there. Orlando, great place to live and vacation and all that. Morning show, great music. Got to interview cool artists. My hours, I was at the pool by 11 a.m. The pool, took a nap there, went to the gym. It was a wonderful life. My career trajectory was right where I needed it to be.
The stumble kind of bothered me right there. Again, I'm human. I can deal with the us and the ums. The word stumble got me.
On the weekends, I knew a guy named DJ Jake. He was essentially, and we all had this friend, he was the social mayor of Orlando. I would DJ and host clubs and parties with him on Friday and Saturday nights. I would drink for free, do the DJing thing, hang out and hook up with really good-looking people. I mean, it's good work for a 20-something, and I was able to have it. And here's where it gets scary. There would be some Friday or Saturday nights, and again, I'm 20-something at this point, early 20s, and I would call Jake up and say, I don't think I can make it tonight. And he'd be totally understanding. I didn't understand it, but there was something shackling me from the inside as to why it wasn't shyness or introversion. I couldn't go. And he was totally understanding of that. We'll jump ahead a little bit and we'll go talk about my inner web MD, which whether you like Star Trek or Star Wars, was on hyperdrive or warp speed when I was a little bit older, my mid-20s, living and working in Saginaw. I enjoyed working there with the people, made some lifelong friendships. Living in Saginaw, we got it really good here where we're at.
All that stuff was off the cuff, was extemporaneous and not in the speech like the Star Wars, Star Trek thing. When I wrote the speech, I left myself some wiggle room to ad-lib. That was all ad-libbed and an unnecessary tangent and a waste of time.
I would have these strange bouts of questions like, did my social and sexual decisions in my recent past, well, did that wreck my liver? Or, when it got really bad, did I perhaps have the as yet unidentified STD cancer AIDS hybrid? I hadn't been to the dentist in like 5 years, so I just assumed my teeth would begin to fall out one by one by one. And mind you, there were no symptoms. This all culminated, this medical drama that puts that that show with Ellen Pompeo to shame.
Another poor ad lib there, and you'll hear why I couldn't get out Grey's Anatomy and why I mentioned the actress instead. You'll hear how my brain was working if you follow along closely in a couple of seconds.
With a real ailment, something in my chest here, this anytime I would ingest anything, mostly liquids, it would feel like it would make Pompeii look like a match was flickering out.
Do you know Pompeii? Like the volcano, what was it over in Greece that erupted many, many, many years ago and all these people were fried under molten lava and we're still digging out the ruins today? Yeah, so like I was getting ready to share that metaphor and it made me forget Grey's Anatomy and I said Ellen Pompeii instead. Grey drops.
And I just assumed it was kind of like the first of many heart attacks, or heart problems anyway. This is all up here. I called my dad, who is my rock with things, and I was totally panicked, and my dad still is my rock, and I basically alluded to having a heart attack. And my dad's like, hold on a second, like any dad would say, how long has this been going on? And I'm like, 2 weeks. He's like, well, okay, well, congratulations, you're having the longest heart attack in human history.
More laughs. I feel good. The laughs warmed me up and slowed me down and got rid of the anxiety.
Turns out it was like acid reflux. And as you might have guessed where this is all going, some volcanic levels of anxiety. And this was on the days when
I could have used another adjective besides volcanic. Drop a point there, too.
I didn't feel like I was depressed. I was down. I was sad. And there was no reason. Like, life was good. Sex was good. My dog was good. My friend work, everything was good. So it was one or the other. And I would call these like the beginning of my emotional valleys. So I wasn't averse to it. I'd been to a therapist, a counselor in Orlando, Dr. Mary Lidke. She's probably dead now, but she was very helpful. I don't know why I went. I don't know how she helped, but she did. In fact, so much so that when DJ Jake called me and said, hey, can I talk to somebody? She helped him too. So now we're in the summer of 2005, and again, I decided to go back to a counselor. These emotional valleys had become too much. I explained to her what was going on. She saw I was a creative type, intelligent, and I'm thankful to have those two traits thanks to all this up here and what was going on. But I expressed, like, low energy, anxiety. I didn't want to socialize. If I did, and to this day, my friends who are in the room can attest to this, I would be hesitant to make plans because when it would time would come to do the plans, Well, Eric wouldn't exactly be there. Or if he would, he'd only be there for 10 minutes and then gone. The other thing that anybody who has suffered from any kind of depression can sympathize with, I didn't want to get out of bed. I had to, though. We have to get out of bed. When I did get out of bed, I counted the minutes and seconds to getting back into bed. Not because my bed was safe, but because I could go to sleep. And for 6, 7, 8 hours, this mysterious melancholy was not anything I was thinking about.
We've loosened up now. The anxiety's gone. We're rolling. Like I said, the second half of this talk is much better. Is much more. It's more comfortable for me to deliver than the second half. Than the first half. The anxiety was aside. Thanks to the last, probably.
She digested all this and said, okay, I got this. Bipolar 2, before the happy emoji even came around. I was completely elated. I was sitting down like this, and then I literally got up and cheered. It's like I won the Super Bowl. Pour the damn Gatorade on me. And she's like, well, that's not exactly the reaction I get when I tell somebody they've got a mental illness. I said, you've never met me before. I was truly elated. This was the best day of my life, and it still is, because I, being endlessly curious, knew who the enemy was. I put my Sun Tzu Art of War hat on that I made at home, and I said, I'm going to do whatever I know how to do besides going to therapy to beat this foe. Books. You can laugh if you want. Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Dummies. I went and bought this book. And this other one right here, this Feeling Good Handbook, it is what I call my psychology Bible. It's the best piece of this I've ever read. And both of these books and more offered me some very easy to digest, practical, applicable things that I was almost immediately able to improve what was going on with me. I didn't care the social cost. I felt like shit. And I didn't know why, but I knew why. I just wanted to feel better.
That's a big line right there. I didn't care about the social cost. I just wanted to feel better. I think that's a good takeaway point.
Some of these books and others taught me certain techniques like, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, this doesn't get me anxious. I enjoy doing this. But what's the worst that can happen if you came up here and if I called you up here to talk right now? They boo you off? Nothing.
Another ad lib that kind of went sideways. I think because of the laughing, I had people engaged now, so I figured I would use them as I typically do when I host events and things and draw them further in. And again, an ad lib and an analogy, like what's the worst that could happen? As far as that was not a real strong one by pointing to that gentleman.
Flooding and immersion, good for anxiety or things you're scared of because they're often irrational. Immerse yourself. Flood yourself with what you're afraid of. And once you see that it's irrational and sit through it, sweat it out, you'll see it was irrational. It will have gone away. The last one, fortune telling. We all do this, especially if there's something not right up here where the chemicals are wrong, like with me. We predict what we think will happen. It's usually bad. The other thing that we do is we think we know how we will react to bad situations. 2 years ago, if you would have told me I was going to get fired and I'd probably be 3 sideways to Saturday not knowing what I was going to do with myself. Well, guess what? I got fired and I'm up here right now.
People have pointed out to me I didn't really get fired. It's a layoff, but that's far more complicated, and it's a little bit more dramatic, especially for things like this to say fired.
These very applicable techniques helped me immensely. Look at it this way. If I were to fall off the stage right now, that would be embarrassing. I'd probably be hurt, too. But if you strain something, if you think you broke something, if you've got a cough, whoever that was, not calling you out, but if it gets real phlegmy, we're unfortunately conditioned to haul ass to the... First, we're going to post about it on Facebook.
That was an ad lib that worked well.
Then we're going to haul ass to the doctor, and we're maybe even going to go to urgent care 24/7, because now, especially here where we live, I can get to an urgent care faster than I can find a Starbucks, and that's saying something. Why do we address that so quickly, but not what's up here? Because of stigma. Of course, and usually what's up here shrouds our judgment and obfuscates our happiness. I'm the 1 in 5 I mentioned, but there's a lot of dark times where I inch closer to to the 1 in 25, the severe stuff. I'll tell you about a time I was living and working in Allentown. Again, job's going really well. I was an hour from home, originally from Philadelphia, and I'm driving on a highway called 22. I called my dad. I was in one of these emotional valleys. So my dad knew where I was on the other end of the phone, and I felt helpless. I wanted to escape. I was exasperated feeling like this. And I said to my dad, "Dad, I don't care right now if my car careened into the median. I want this to end." There was silence on the other end of the phone. Had I jerked the wheel, there would have been silence on my end of the phone.
Up till now, that's probably the best couple of seconds in the speech. When my dad listened to and watched this and we talked about it afterwards, he used words that I'm not used to hearing him use. Like he said, exhilarating, thrilling, and scary, which you can understand why. In the moment, maybe back then, he was one kind of scared. But to know that I think all these things all these years later is another kind of scary.
And from that moment forward, I resolved, no matter how bleak things were, I couldn't go through with that. 90% of suicides are connected, and if suicide bothers you, I suggest you leave right now, because I'm going to say some pretty challenging things to what you think about this. 90% of suicides are connected to mental health. The other 10%, I like to say, you owe little Tony a lot of money. I'm working on that joke, I swear.
I had practiced that joke so many times, and it got funnier and funnier every time I practice it. I guess because we're talking suicide and then I throw that curveball in there, people don't know what to do. Especially when I invited people to leave because we're going to talk about suicide. Again, 90% of mental health issues or 90% of suicides are connected to mental health issues. The other 10% are because you owe little Tony a little money. I hope nobody got offended by it. Maybe people were offended and that's why they didn't laugh. But that's a funny joke. Come on. There we go.
I'm working on that one. All right, so go back to the 90-10 thing. Healthy-minded people, when everything is working right up here, don't get out of bed, enjoy a day like this, go to the gym, come home and go, you know what? I'm going to blow my fucking brains out today. That's the disease. That's the illness talking. I, like I said, have resolved never to do that, although I have had suicidal thoughts, and I immediately think back to my dad. I've wanted to escape this darkness before. Thankfully, I haven't gone through with it. I don't know where I think I go. Not a religious person. Maybe where I would go is worse. I don't know. I'm here, so I haven't been there. I know that you don't come back. The emotional shrapnel that flies from committing that act is unconscionable. The emotional collateral damage that you cause from that selfish act to escape whatever it is unthinkable. But we don't talk about this stuff. You don't talk about it. I do. It's stigmatized for most people.
That's good stuff right there. And that's why I believe that suicide is a selfish act. For the most part, you are trying to escape these dark, hopeless feelings that you have. You're thinking only about yourself because, and again, I know this is a complicated thing, but I'm going like textbook definition here of the word selfish. You're only thinking of yourself. I've been able to kind of remove myself from my darkness at times and go, as I just explained, if I kill myself, maybe I feel better wherever I go. But the pain that I inflict on my family and friends is everlasting and unconscionable. That's why, to me, suicide is selfish. It's not intentionally selfish. If you were doing something intentional, you would get away from the darkness. You would find some hope. You would get yourself help. But it is, when you look at it in that vacuum of you and others that love you, it's the definition of selfish.
We're not where we need to be. We're not in pre-Freudian times anymore. We're not in the 1950s. There is no vehicle outside that's going to say, "Eric, you got to come with us. Back in the straitjacket. I'm not going back to any asylum." And yes, the shirt. I didn't dress up because of the meaning here, the duality of this all. I'm not going back to an asylum. We don't call them that anymore. I'm not going to be institutionalized. No one's going to take me after this and cut my skull open and take out parts of my brain. We don't do that anymore. all these words right here, if I were to go to a psychological professional, a counselor, for the very first time and sat down and explained all the things I'm telling you guys, they're not going to say I'm a psycho or mad or a weirdo, crazy, a lunatic. None of those words are going to get used. I do my best to take them out of my daily lexicon, especially in this context. Let's do a little exercise. What's the worst that could happen from a couple of minutes ago? If you, maybe inspired by me here today or someone else who talks about this stuff, you want to talk to a friend about some depressive feelings, maybe some dark ones. One of two things is likely to happen. They're either going to say, what can I do to get you some help? I've heard about free resources like NAMI. We're going to get you there right away. Or they're going to say, you're crazy. Let's have a drink and we'll get over it. They're either not as close as you thought, or they're ignorant to where we're going with mental health and raising more and more awareness. I told you this isn't curable, but it damn sure is treatable. It's why I'm standing here today. The other bad news is it's often progressive. As it gets stronger, you have to get stronger. Just like we work out at the gym to get stronger or faster, we got to work out up here. We got to get more educated. We got to follow the science. The imaging is getting better so we can better diagnose these. Therapists, I've been to a lot of them. The one I have right now is absolutely incredible. You might not click with the first or second one, but the right one is out there when you decide to seek the help or help for that person. Employers, ask about EAP programs. Employee assistance programs. They give you like 3, 5, 7 confidential visits, obviously, free visits, so you can find the right person. I like to relate counselors and therapy to dating. You date a lot of different people before you find that person that you're going to spend a long time with because they understand how you think, how you talk. Maybe you connect better with someone of the opposite sex or the same sex. Medications. This has been the most trying part of all of this for me because the side effects, you've heard and read all about them. One medication that I thought was working, it lifted my depression, but in the middle of the day, I was sedated. So I was depressed from wanting to go to bed at 8 o'clock. Different dosages, experimentation, what works, combinations. It's challenging. I'm not going to lie to you about that. It's tough. In fact, right now what I'm on is Cymbalta. I was on Wellbutrin for a very long time. I didn't know that Cymbalta, which was suggested to me by a friend for some chronic pain, was going to work better. I just stumbled onto it. Not only has it squashed my depression, but it has completely quelled any of my anxiety as well, and I stumbled onto it. So stick with it. I assure you, the daily struggle will be less of one. My dogs are my therapy. The gym is my therapy. Doing this is my therapy.
That line right there, doing this is my therapy, may have been the most genuine and authentic emotion I was able to convey during the entire speech.
I've got to know my triggers. Like stress, which we can't avoid. I've got to watch out for the cloud. But the triggers, one is alcohol. Don't let this stop you from drinking here today and have a good time. I've got to limit my alcohol, which is difficult because I like to drink. For two reasons. One, it's a depressant. Two, it inhibits my medication ability to do what it's supposed to do.
Love the word there. It inhibits my medication's ability to do what it's supposed to do.
It fuels that cloud. That cloud gets bigger and stronger when I ask myself some existential questions about life, like maybe I shouldn't be doing radio or Facebook Live from my living room. Maybe I should go home and live with my dad in Philadelphia. Maybe I should say, F you to the hurricanes, I'm going to live in the tropics. The more outlandish those questions get, the bigger that cloud is. That cloud is not filled with rain or nudes or dick pics. Couple of dick pics. It's filled with havoc-wreaking depression. So how do I fight it off? How do I move it away from me? Get back into a routine. Get your ass up and go to the gym. Take the dogs for a longer walk. If it's really serious, go see your therapist. Maybe your medications need to be changed. It says, stay in bed. It says, don't socialize. It says, have a couple more drinks. I've got to do the opposite of what it's telling me to do so that I can shrink it and push it away for one more day. I know we were talking superheroes earlier with Alex's stuff.
I don't think it was Alex's stuff. I think it was somebody else.
I wish I was a superhero. I mean, it's a good job, good hours. They're usually rich. I'm down with wearing a cape and a costume. You get pretty girls. You get to beat up bad guys. There's really very little bad stuff about it.
There's actually a lot of bad stuff about being a superhero, but I think at that point I tried to grip people as much as I possibly could, make a quick analogy, and move on.
I don't have a single traditional superpower, but I can stand up here and talk about mental health without stigma, and you can talk about mental health without stigma as well.
That's the superpower? Like, again, it's not I can fly, or I'm invisible, or I have metal adamantium claws, but it is a bit of a super. Can I do something that many others can't do? Yes, I can talk about this stuff freely and openly. So it's my superpower.
It is cathartic. It is medicinal. I've told you how my mind has concocted some insidious and I thought fatal diseases. I have shunned responsibilities and jobs and friends and relationships. I have thought about with the world, my dad, and my dogs would be like without me in it. But I'm still here because I've armed myself with everything that I've talked about. The free resources like NAMI, your counselors, your EAP. Buy a dog. You could do the same. As we wrap up here, do me a couple of favors. In those darkest hours, know that you're not alone. There's millions of us. There's millions of me. But to end, in those dark and hopeless and helpless of times, remember those two key root words, help and hope. They are there for you. I'm happy to have been as well. And thank you.
Oh, did you hear it? I had it all set up. The pacing was good. There was a great long pause to make things sound epic at the end. The build-up. Do me a couple of favors. Know there's plenty of people like me and like you. There's millions of us. In those dark and hopeless and helpless of times, remember those two key root words, help and hope. They're there for you, and I'm happy to have been as well. I flubbed that last sentence. Thank you for letting me walk you through my TEDx Toledo talk and letting you hear why I, after I got off stage, gave myself a B+. But now we've walked through this, and you see why I pulled my grade down to a B-. But I do think the message remains. There is hope. There is help. And I know because I've been in those periods of darkness. The last time was in March and April of 2017, where I had to elude work. I had to get a doctor's note to come back to work because I'd missed so many days. But at that point, I wasn't hiding. I was fighting it. It's the first time in my life where I decided to be aggressive. I decided to be on the offensive instead of the defensive against my bipolar type 2. Two doctor's appointments, two therapist appointments, a change of medication. Sat with my doctor, my PCP, for an hour talking about everything. And I was thankful he gave me his time. That's why I share his name with others and my therapist's name with others. I got offensive with it. I got aggressive with it. And I managed to keep stress at a minimum. And I've had some great months. Now, it's incumbent upon me to keep it like that whenever I find what's next, because I don't want to go back to where I was, to scaring friends and the few family members that I have left, because I don't want my dad to spend his last 20-some years, 30-some years. We have good DNA in the family. Everybody lives into the 90s, except for my mom. Everybody else into the 90s. I don't want my dad to spend his final years with only one son. Thanks for listening. The Morning After, Saturday mornings, 8 to 10, a little bit more of me till 11, then Sundays from 12 to 4 on Q105, Q105.com.